When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It would be a waltz, but hey.
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
And welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Joining me tonight, I've got Ed, Tom and Adam. We're going to, of course, be talking about the 1-1 draw against Aston Villa at the weekend. Firstly, I guess, quick apologies for the show not coming out yesterday. Basically, between the four of us and additional backup people, we all managed to have something go wrong. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we won't have a mid-air disruption. This is where I'll accidentally click the end stream button halfway through. But unlike us, Wolves seem to put together a decent performance at the weekend. There's your segue, gents. Let's talk lineup because, well, it's a nice place to start, although it's not really much to talk about because it was the same lineup. I mean, Tom, happy enough with it? Very little research change. A winning team against Man City is fair.
Yeah, that's the team I'd have picked. So I think 90% of Wolves fans I spoke to said the same as well. I've got a feeling maybe it will change, you know, systems and what have you as the season goes on. But I think for the moment, while we're getting results, I think this is the way we've got to go. I think it just suits all the players that we've got, and each player was playing, you know, their right position. I've lost count of how many times over the last couple of years, especially where we're playing players who aren't suited the position that they're in on the pitch. So it was ideal. Yeah, what changed the winning team?
Yeah, I've made a talking point to kind of discuss the back three in a bit more detail later on, but it does feel, I don't know, like it's almost on paper and that eye test that, oh, we look a lot more solid team when we've got that sort of lineup pricey.
Yeah, you just use the word I was going to use, and as solid, we just appear like we're always looking more solid team with five at the back, three at the back, however you want to splice it. Whenever we started playing four at the back under Bruno and into the Lopetegui as well, we never looked truly comfortable when we played as a four. And you can understand playing five at the back when we played like the likes of Man City, because you know you're going to get hammered. So I wasn't surprised that we didn't change the team. Playing Villa against Man City just posed a different set of challenges, essentially. Obviously, there was a lot of talk beforehand of should we keep the same team, et cetera, same players. But obviously, the immediate reaction is to keep the same because you just got a result against the best team in Europe / the world. So why would you change it? And I think it was wise to do that because we just, as you say, we just appear much, much more solid with that defensive setup. It just seems to me, it just seems to give Dawson a much better chance of success at the back there. You saw what he did against Haaland. He just rendered him quite as a dormouse, didn't he, the whole game against Man City. And as we'll probably get into shortly, you know, yes, Villa had their chances, but, you know, still overall, I think for the short term, at least, that I think this formation should be here to stay.
Yeah, I know we mentioned in the last couple of shows in terms of, I guess, the similarities between O'Neill's start and Large's start. and I don't know, seem going back to a back three and trying to play a bit more conservative, dare I say, seems to have led into that. But it's going to, I think it's going to be interesting. So, say, like, we've got Bournemouth after the international break, and I think how we line up against them, I guess, tactics and personnel wise, because I'm assuming Bellegarde will be back as well. Like, you know, whether we kind of, I guess, if we're playing him, I think it'll be a bit of a show of intent in terms of, you know, how we're looking to play. Because at the moment, 4 points from those last two games is it's a real, real positive and really needed considering the criticism the team was under. Let's talk about the game, because Wolves did start a little bit sloppily and a little bit slowly, but thankfully, Ed, Jose Sarr seems to have really stepped up his game at the moment.
Yeah, he's got that new contract, hasn't he?
Do you think that's what was holding him back? he wanted his bag, no, as the kids would say.
No, he secured the bag. I think that is what the kids say, isn't it? No, shot stopping's always been his game, right? We saw it at Everton. I think we just have a goalkeeper that will probably be divisive for his time at our club, but we've seen the last two games and the Everton game what he can do in terms of his shot stopping. I think the Man City game, his handling was exceptional. And I think just to piggyback on Price's point about the back three, I think the back three also allows for more voices at the back to tell him to calm down. There was a point at one point in that second half when I think it was Dawson that basically stood in front of him to stop him booting it long too quickly. So I think it just, yeah, he might have got the message. Maybe he needs a chaperone at some points, and maybe through at the back means Dawson can do that at some points as well and be his dad for a bit and tell him to calm down. But he's a shot stopper. He's always been a shot stopper. And I think we talked about after the Everton game, I was on with Stu and Blake. He's going to win you points. He's going to give some away, but he's going to win you more points, I think, than he's going to lose us points, personally.
Yeah, I was going to say, interesting. Very reflective of what you said, Ed, in the comments, Tyler. Big shout out to everyone who's listening live on YouTube, of course. Is Sarr looking better because he's got an extra man in front of him now? And yes, to be honest. And I think it's interesting how like that whole defensive unit has stepped up. I mean, I think Kilman's come under a lot of slack this season, I think, because he has got the captain's armband and he is that bit more visible as a player, and he can't quietly drift through a game if he needs to. He needs to be a lot more accountable. But I also, up until that Man City game, I don't think Dawson had a amazing start to the season. I don't think he was significantly better than Kilman, but you know, Dawson was obviously bloody brilliant against Man City, and again showed that similar level of old experience head in the middle of a back three, plenty of protection, plenty of athleticism either side of him. And Kilman as well looked that, playing on that right side just really seems to suit him in a back three as well. And there was points against Man City, there was points on Saturday where, you know, he was just getting the opportunity to carry the ball 30 yards forward, which I don't remember ever seeing him do when we've played a back four, really.
I think it ticks a lot of boxes for each of the three of those centre-halves. I think Dawson's a header and kick it type defender, isn't he? So he's a defendy box type player. And I lost count of how many corners he cleared. I know that I had quite a lot of corners, and I wager that he probably cleared more than half of them just on his own. Also, it means he doesn't get dragged out wide, and when he gets pulled out to the channels, that's when when we're really in trouble, because, you know, let's face it, he's not, you know, there's boats that turn faster than he does. And then also, yeah, absolutely, Totti and Kilman, but like you touched on it perfectly there, which I think athleticism either side, it allows them to bring the ball out from the back. I mean, Kilman likes, you know, as I say, just likes to run out the back, but then it obviously gives us the protection if we do get caught out. There's a few balls that he tried to hit, you know, almost like through balls from centre half, which got cut out. And I think if you're playing four at the back, you're exposed straight away. And also, it led, I think Totti pretty sure he had a man marking job, didn't he, on Diaby? And he didn't have a kick all game. So it does allow you to go man to man, you know, on some of their danger players as well, which again we saw against Man City. So as a defensively solid unit, I think it ticks so many boxes, and I think it's something that we need to persevere with.
Yeah, and I think particularly with like Santi Bueno, who, you know, no one impressed him about Cup game. Don't get me wrong, but he had a bit of a welcome to England moment, and I sort of think if he gets the opportunity to play in a back three, we, you know, look at what it's done for Toti Gomez in his career at Wolves, having that extra, you know, support alongside him. So I think it's going to be a really interesting decision for O'Neill after the international break. I find it fascinating how, you know, this almost feels, I don't know, such a throwback to Nuno and his time here. And obviously we were, you know, absolute disciples of the back three. And it's not been our manager for several seasons now, but we can't shake it off that these players, it just works for them to a degree. So yeah, I found it interesting throughout the game. Say, Toti Gomez, just, you know, Diaby gets hooked off after what, an hour? Was it, you know, nothing of note throughout the whole game. But I'm keen to talk to you guys about the front three, because yet again, and it wasn't just the goal, but Hwang, he is on some fucking hero arc this season, isn't he? I mean, Tom, I'm pricey. We spent a long time slating him in certain spells in the last couple of years. But there was a point in the game the weekend, when he got the ball like almost on the edge of his own box and just like sold a dummy and turned into the middle of the pitch and wasn't scared. Because he just seems like he's got that extra bit of composure. He's not, I don't know, scared or just like, just having a heavy touch or anything like that.
That's the thing that's improved dramatically. That first touch has improved dramatically. I mean, I've got I'm very happy to do this, but I will completely hold my hands up and seek redemption for Hwang Ki-chan at the moment. Because obviously when he was bad, I probably called it out quite a lot on this pod, how bad that I thought he was. And I probably wasn't alone, if I'm honest. You know, I think there's a lot of people who could see that he wasn't really working for him at the time. But I don't know what he's done over the summer or what we've been doing with him or what's happened, but it just seems to be, just seems to have clicked with him at the moment. He just, I mean, how crazy it is that we've actually, after 8 games of a Premier League season, we have a player in the top 5 Premier League scorers chart. And it's Hwang Ki-chan, and he's on 5 goals, right? And it's only, I looked earlier at the stats, he's only played 417 minutes, which is like at least 200 less than the guys above him, like Son and Haaland. So he's in a very rich vein of goal scoring form, and he just seems to be finding, it's almost like he knows how to find the space in the box, and you know, he's suddenly like learned how to finish, you know, he's a completely different player from what he was last season. Like I say, I call it as I see it. And then right now, you have to give him all the praise in the world, because he's been quite decisive for us. He's scoring quite a few goals for us now. He's deciding games for, helping to decide games for us. And at the minute, as part of that front three, he's one of the first names on the team sheet at the moment, because that front three seems to be gelling quite nicely. I mean, we'll obviously go into quite a lot of depth about it, but Neto is having just the season of his life at the moment. He, some games this season, he has been a bit of a one-man show as an attacking front. He's been so good. I mean, Cunha to a lesser extent, he's not having the chances that he probably would like to have, but we all know, and I'm again, Tom and Ed, interested in your views on this, but with Cunha, to me, he seemed a bit more of a support striker than someone who should be leading the line, being at the front of our front three. But obviously, the other two options we've got for that on the bench, O'Neill doesn't seem to want to use at the moment. But at the moment, that front three just picks itself.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, I think Cunha's a facilitator. That's the role he's playing right now, isn't it? Whether or not it's by choice or by design or a bit of both, he's allowing his two mates that are playing on the wing, who are having their seasons of their lives, to flourish right now. And I think that's maybe his role might be to be that like Firmino type centre forward, that he might get a few, you know, 5 or 6 goals in the season, but he'll also get 7 or 8 assists and those second assists that, you know, the assist of the assister. And things like the goal against Man City last week for Hwang, to not just turn around and swing his left foot at that. It takes more to realise that someone's in a better position when you're maybe under a little bit of pressure to not be a goal scorer. There's a chance there to have a swing and try, but he's gone, we've got one chance of getting this in the back of the net, so I'm going to pass it to my mate. And I think, Price, you were spot on the money there. I think Hwang, whether it was the World Cup, whether it's his English is better, whether he's more settled, who knows? But he seems like the player that we thought we had right at the start when he kind of came in and scored a few goals, and we thought we had this, you know, the Korean guy, the superstar that we were getting from the other side of the world. And yeah, he's playing brilliantly at the minute.
Maybe he didn't like his FIFA card or something, and it spurred him on to be in even better than, or whatever it's called, FC24, whatever it's called. Maybe his card, he didn't like it. He didn't like his stats, and they were trying to prove him all wrong.
I was going to say, maybe he's laid off for biscuits.
Yeah, maybe off the biscuits. Yeah, I've got a tweet. I don't know what's going on. It's like the anti-space jam. I just don't get it. Like, he's just a completely different player. I would say he's always been a threat in the box. He's got a really good knack of just getting in the, being in the right position, and that's something he can't teach. It's something our strikers haven't had since prime Jimenez. So there's a skill in that in itself. But everything is all round game, and you know there's a point in time. I was on the back end of the season before last when our own players were laughing at him because his control was so bad. I remember that Liverpool game. Yeah. And I was just laughing in front of him. And now look, they all love him. So, yeah, long may it continue.
He did start off well, didn't he? Remember? Yeah, when he first joined.
Yeah.
He did get 2 or 3 or 4 maybe in his first handful of games. So the threat, as you said, Tom, has always been a threat. The threat was there right from the start. He just seemed to just drop off a cliff completely, didn't he, after those initial games?
I think hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it? But I think those niggling injuries didn't help matters. So like you say, he started brightly, then was out for like 3 months, and then just could not pick up any level of form or high-end fitness. And like, you know, he's getting subbed off at about 70 or so minutes now. And yes, on Sunday, it was like the first time for me it felt like he could have played for longer as well. And he wasn't just completely, I was going to say, hanging out his arse. I should say wanging out his arse, I guess. But yeah, he just seems fitter and more confident and just more assured in himself. And I think you're right, like, he knows how to get into the right position, but he seems, under O'Neill at least, in this system, I know he just seems to know when to make those runs, and particularly when you've got Kuna, or the goal's a great example of it, and you know, skipping over bits of the game because all the fun stuff happened in the second half. But, you know, I think the play literally was Hwang to Kuna, Kuna to Neto, and Neto did Neto things. And Hwang ended up effectively being the third man runner to get in the box. And I mean, let's talk Neto for the goal and just in general, because the boy is different gravy at the moment. And he is doing what effectively, like he did against Man City and Luton and against Villa. He's the player who I think people wanted Adama Traore to be. But he's actually providing that bit of end product. He is going past half a fucking team and then finding someone, you know, taking it quite frankly as far as he could take the ball and then picking out someone in the box. And I think part of it is him, but I think having someone like Hwang, who has almost just been told, just get in the box, get between 6-yard box and penalty box, and he'll find you. And it's just a match made in heaven at the moment.
Yeah, you've kind of like took the words out of my mouth there, Richard Morris, because I was just going to say that he's scored the same goal three games running now. So it's like that taking on Lockie, wasn't it, for Luton, just like left him dead, scored. City, the same, just like charging down. Aki couldn't get near him, scored, although own goal. And then Sunday, just the same thing again, just broke away, took on the player, beat him, put it in, scored. So he's done effectively or almost the same thing there, three games running. And you are right, he's got the pace and power that, obviously not the pace to the same extent as Adama, but he's doing what Adama did, but he's got the quality now and he's doing it on a much more consistent basis. I mean, imagine like this prime Neto with prime Raul back in the day. Whew, that would have been nice, but he's just having the season of his life. I mean, what this means is there'll inevitably be a transfer at the end of it, probably just to destroy all our hopes and dreams. But, you know, what his role is for us in our team just fits into a T. You know, we've probably, you know, seen online some of the talk that if he goes to an Arsenal or something, he's going to have a completely different set of challenges because he's going to have the ball all the time if he goes in that situation against the, and I hate the term, low block, basically just deep defence. But with us, obviously, we're going to be counter-attacking or we're going to be on the break. And that's his time to shine, isn't it? When he's just got one-on-one versus a player or, you know, up against a retreating defender. That's what the last three goal involvements he's had been like. And we're just seeing, we're seeing like the really prime Neto, because last year it was really like interrupted with injury and what have you. Just that now we're seeing what the true Neto is. And yeah, he's just playing out of his skin and it's great.
He's got a confidence as well, hasn't he, to go on the right, which he's not had before, which is why you guys on the pod and now I've joined, we've all been saying he can't play on the right because there was never a threat on the outside to make it easier for him to come inside like he did against Luton. But two of those three goals you just talked about, Pricey, were right foot cutbacks that we got goals from. So there's something has changed either in his training regime or just his pure confidence to not be wary of going on the outside. And that opens up. That's what Adama couldn't do, right? Not just the end product. He could never come inside. That left foot was nothing, was it? So you always knew he was just going to run and he was going to get to the byline and 9 times out of 10, he's hitting it out for a throw-in. But with Neto, he's got the ability to come inside. It's, I guess, why managers have persisted with playing him on the right, because this is what he is capable of, maybe with the right confidence, with the right coaching, whatever it is that's happening. But something's been unlocked, a bit like you talked about with Huang. Something's been unlocked this season in him, and maybe it's he wants to be the man. I think it feels like this is his team. And maybe there's something in that. Neves has gone. There's no old hand in Moutinho that he, you know, respected and looked up to. Podence isn't there to take some of the shine off. Maybe he's just realising this is his team now.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely needed to step up. We've needed someone to step up. And, you know, I think that forward line, we've already kind of said, well, Kuna's not necessarily someone who's going to bag a lot of goals. He is a facilitator. He is, you know, he's your supporting actor, isn't he? Huang, again, to a similar degree, he will score. He's shown he can score goals, but he kind of relies on other people to create them. Huang's not going to necessarily get a goal out of nothing for us. Whereas Neto is the guy who is pushing us up the pitch, who is driving everything forward. And I think definitely on Sunday, you know, the defender tripped up because he's now, his balance has shot up so much. The defenders don't know whether he's going to go inside or out, because he'll sort of look to check back on his left foot and cut inside and try and bend one in the far corner. Or he knows he can take it another 5 yards and cut it back on his right foot and still get the same quality at the end of it. I think it's, you know, looking back at Neto, and particularly when he sort of first started at Wolves and when he first joined, he looked a bit raw playing on the left wing. And then after COVID, he looked a different player. And he does strike me as someone, when you kind of marry that, and I guess his improvement on the last sort of 6 weeks of the season, just someone who does knuckle down and is someone who's genuinely trying to improve his game, which you'd think would be an absolute basic for a footballer, but he seems to be someone who must put in a lot of additional work to make sure he is being that man at the moment.
That right foot is a bit of work.
Talisman
vibes.
If you noticed after the goal, when he was coming back to our half, he was sort of cheering up the crowd, like flinging his arms up in the air quite a lot. And I just got that sort of, yeah, he wants to be my man here. I think he's got that sort of talisman vibe. So, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think if he carries on this sort of vein of form, I think it's going to be pretty tricky to keep hold of him. But he seems like he's up for it. He really does. I wasn't convinced at the first few games of the season, but now, I don't know, something's just clicked. And he's, I think he seems really happy, and he seems like, yeah, he wants to be the main man, which at the moment, that's basically between him and Hwang. They're what we've got at the moment going forward, and let's just pray that neither of them get injured anytime soon.
Don't worry, we've got a long 2 weeks on international break for them to both do their knees in. But I think
his passion's really coming through, isn't it? With Neto at the moment, really, really coming through, and there's always an element to that. But like I say, now he's one of the first names on the team sheet. Like I say, he's just like trying to carry what a fan would be like on the pitch, essentially, because, you know, you see some of the goal celebrations he has, he's going hell for leather with his celebrations sometimes.
It's infectious, isn't it? Isn't it?
It's like what we might do if we were on the pitch. But then, you know, that I just wish you'd have put that chance away as well.
It was an absolute classic. The two players needed to be switched around because Sasha would come on at that point, and he was one who'd end up almost being in a left wing position. And for a 6'20", you know, guy, it was a lovely ball across the face.
Brilliant ball.
It was just not quite who you'd have wanted that chance to fall to, unfortunately. And at that point, you know, it was up and down as well. And, you know, it always felt that, oh, we could just get that chance. It was such a shame he couldn't cap off that performance with a goal himself. But unfortunately, after Wolves scored, no one was doing the absolute football basics for me. You know, where's Craig Dawson? Where's Max Kilman saying, lads, it's 0-0? it's simple stuff. It's simple stuff. But yeah, we did concede, and I know it. Just, I've watched it back about 3 or 4 times now, and I don't quite know how it all happened, because they had this free kick just in the middle of nowhere, and then, say, Watkins ends up picking the ball up and just hooking it back, and I can't work out if Wolves have done badly there, if Villa kind of know what they're doing, or just a bit of a breakdown, to be honest.
Right, so it's a good ball. It's a good ball from Watkins, isn't it? The ball's broke to the edge of the box, and maybe you'd say Watkins on his weaker foot to try and loft one over to the back stick isn't the worst case scenario. I don't know what the XG is on, or the XA is on that assist that he's got, but it's a great ball. But it's a bit of a nothing goal, isn't it? Like you said, it is football at the park when half your team are hungover. You do need someone to shout, you know, it's still 0-0, lads, and switch on, and all the other nonsense that people shout out. And we've just gone to sleep, haven't we? Maybe we've basked in that glory a little bit. It's, you know, it's the cliches come out, don't they, about a goal straight after you've just scored. And it's a defendable goal, that goal. I think Aston Villa created better chances that they didn't score compared to the one that they did. That was a bit of a, yeah, we switched off, I think. I think we switched off for that goal.
There's someone behind Torres as well. I think they're two men at the back stick. So we just out of sync. Semedo's got a bit of flack for it, and yet it probably is his man, but then there's another man behind him as well. So, you know, so there's more than one person not doing the job, and managers hate second phase set piece goals, don't they? Because basically, like I say, they haven't switched on after the initial ball's been cleared. It's just so frustrating because the crowd was so up and the atmosphere was absolutely bouncing, and I think you just keep them quiet just for 5 minutes maybe. And I think then, you know, I think the crowd then probably gets you through. Frustrating.
Really, I agree. Frustrating. I agree. That was the most frustrating thing about it, that we're in the lead for barely 2 minutes. Couldn't even properly enjoy it for a bit, really, could we? Yeah. You know, because... Yeah, as we said, the first half wasn't great. The game itself wasn't actually that great at all, was it really? But the first half was a bit of a scrappy affair. No real big chances, that apart from the Matty Cash chance that Villa had. And then the second half, yeah, we get that goal fairly early on, about 10 minutes or so into the second half. And then you think, here we go, that's just what we needed now. You know, it's, again, and we should, as we were saying earlier, we should be looking more solid, but given... the back three now, or back five. So, just to chuck it away after two minutes after the goal. And as we said, the nature of the goal. And it, as I said, it was literally nothing free kick. It was just an aimless free kick pumped in and just gets headed away, but it just drops straight to Watkins. And I think it was the team as a whole just a bit slow to switch on to it. And I think when you do watch the replay back, you can see some of those having a moan at someone. Because as Tom's rightly said, you know, it wasn't just that Torres was there. There was someone else. So he's kind of left, you know, with a bit of a lopsided battle there at the two. So, yeah, a bit of a shame. Because then after that, other than our Neto chance, you know, that was it for us. It was kind of all the chances went Villa's way after that. So, and the referee decisions, obviously, with Lamina going off. So it kind of like all stacked against us, and we can probably see it as a good result.
Yeah, I think it was such a shame, as you say, like, we're 1-0 up and it's like, oh, we're back all square again. I know, particularly after the goal. To be fair, it was a feisty game throughout, and it was a competitive game, I'd say, in the politest manner. But there was a couple of refereeing things. I am the feistiness, because I know the off-the-ball clash with Huang and Douglas Luiz was a tetchy one, because he did turn around and like at least give him something. There's little bits like that throughout it, which, to be honest, I think quite like on a derby day, to be honest. But both teams had penalty shouts, and if you watch Match of the Day and all the, you know, a lot more focus on the one for Villa for reasons I don't quite understand personally. But anyway, we'll talk for Wolves one first, for one on Pedro Neto. And I hate doing this. I hate being this guy. But I think ours was a penalty and theirs wasn't. I don't quite know why the Pedro Neto one wasn't given, to be honest.
I think it's a decent show for Neto. I do think it's a decent show. I actually think theirs was more of a penalty than Neto's, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I can see. I think on another day, I think if they were both in different halves, I could almost even get given. But I sort of think with the Neto one, I think it's one of those with the wonderful world of VAR. If it gets given, it doesn't get overturned.
But I think it's the same with both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the same with both. I think if either are given, it probably doesn't get overturned. And actually, watching it live, I didn't think the Neto one was. And I actually thought the Watkins one was a reasonable shout just by watching it live. I mean, I think Watkins does go. I don't know. You don't know how big the push is. It looks like a reasonable push because Watkins just goes down like, you know, a sack of shit. But it's hard to know how much pressure is applied. But it did look like he basically stiff armed him, basically, when he was off balance, just about to take the shot. So I think. Yeah, I think a draw was probably a fair result from the game. So I think, you know, and there was two half decent penalty shots. So like I say, probably a bit more their way than ours. And with the chances that fell at the end, I think you'd probably got to come out with a draw and be pretty content. But yeah, I was half expecting the Watkins one to be given, I think.
I think that was a stonewaller, personally. I think Watkins has still tried to get the shot away, which for me adds some credence to the fact that the push must have been significant enough to cause him to miss by that much. Because if it was, yeah, he's still trying to score at that point, and Doherty is more than an arm's length away. He's really leaning to get something to put him off, and it's old-fashioned fullback play that Doherty's doing there in a season where we have some awful VAR decisions. You can't test the VAR people by defending like that. I think it's a penalty. I agree with Tom. I think, like you said, Rich, was definitely one of those ones that if it was given, it was not overturned. But I was fully expecting it to be overturned when I watched it live, the Watkins one, because it looked too blatant for it to not be classed as clear and obvious.
Yeah, I thought on live viewing, I didn't think it was a penalty. And upon the first time I watched it back on the replay, I thought it would have been soft. But it's like you keep watching it again and again and again. You do put your VAR hat on and you wonder why it's not been looked at, or and if it did, it would come to probably the inevitable conclusion. But I don't think Watkins really appeals too much for it, does he? The player behind him does, who obviously don't know, I can't remember who that was, but I don't really think Watkins appeals that blatantly to the ref that he wants a penalty or what he wants it looked at. So I kind of think that I'll stick with my view. I'll agree with what Doherty put on Twitter X. Never a penalty. Yeah. And I know Eric Dyer disagreed with him, but I'll stick with my original decision that I don't think that was a penalty.
Yeah, Dawson, I think
as well, if you watch Dawson, he does his like little poker, like celebrating, like it's a wonderful, you know, like it's a really good a really good bit of defending. It's like in cricket when clearly a wide, and then, you know, in one day, and then the wicketkeeper's clapping because, you know, that's a great delivery. It's definitely within the lines. It was that classic sort of bluff thing. If you watch Dawson, I think he gets his mate out of jail a little bit.
He just properly like clap him right in Doherty's face for it. I don't know. The reason why I can see why it wasn't given, it's partly in line with, I think it was Dermot Gallagher who did like the penalty officiating review piece, was I don't think it's quite enough of a push. Like, I think he reaches out to touch him, but it's not quite a shove to kind of knock him over. And I think it is a fine line. And I think if it was given as a penalty, I'd have probably been on here going, it was soft, but it's a stupid thing to do in the box when you're 1-1 and it is an up and down game at that point. You know, the field tilt was on a, you know, pivot. And yeah, just I think the fact that both, you say, as Tom said, like, you know, we both had 50-50 penalty calls, neither one of them got given. You can't have just sort of swallow it at that point and move on. But it was feisty, and I kind of noted on Twitter that I think for Wolves to stay in these games and to keep to being competitive, they do need to have better game management and better discipline all round. And I'm not surprised. I think, you know, since he joined in January, Lamina is a walking yellow card, and he obviously got that bizarre red last season against Southampton, but he gets sent off for two bookings. I mean, again, you can't have many complaints with them. I know Gary O'Neill said after the game, he said, I can't remember the first one. That was a definite yellow. But the second one, you expect a yellow. I feel for Mario a bit, because we've gone and pressed unnecessarily and leave him in a spot where he shouldn't be. He's got to then make a decision, whether he lets the guy run through or whether he stops the attack. So it leaves him in a tricky spot. And I think O'Neill carried on. I've not included the additional quote, but I've been in that position before as a midfielder, and most notably Gary O'Neill had that one in the playoff final, didn't he, where he just hacked the bloke down to stop Derby getting into the box. And yeah, I feel sorry for Lamina, because I don't quite know what else he's supposed to do apart from not foul the guy.
Yeah, fully agree. I mean, I agree with you, Rich, and like the first one was a yellow. It definitely was. Cause I couldn't remember it initially, so I went back and watched the highlights just to see the extended highlights to see that tackle. And yeah, that was definitely yellow. The second one, yeah, it just is that they're breaking on us, aren't they? Villa at the time, and he's got a handful of shirt or short or something, and he's just pulling them back. So it's just that unfortunate that's got to be given. It's a bit indicative of our overall discipline, to be honest, and not just under Gary O'Neill, under Lopetegui, we were racking up the cards. And fun fact for you FAC fans, we are third in the discipline charts, as in the third worst. So we've got 24 yellows, 3 reds. We're only worst teams are Chelsea and Spurs at the top of the charts in that regard. So we are clocking up some of the cards again at the moment. But then, to be honest, it's set against the backdrop this specific season of where, you know, the cards are popping out of the ref's pockets left, right and centre, aren't they? You're getting booked for almost anything. I think, I can't remember, was it yesterday? Yeah, I keep saying yesterday. On Sunday, it's Villa players, he got booked after 6 minutes, Kamara, and that straight away just sets the tone, doesn't it? You know, straight in. I think he was his first, I remember Emery, because where I sit, I'm not too far behind the away dugouts, and I could see Emery was just saying, like, put his finger up for one. So that was literally his first foul of the game, like 5 minutes into the game, and he's already booked, and it just sets the precedent then. Although, as a side note, I did enjoy the constant wrestling match between Dawson and, was it McGinn? Was it McGinn? I think he was having the rest.
It was McGinn, I believe. That's it,
on the picture that you put up there. So I think, there's a corner, a couple of corners, and for 2 minutes straight, they were just wrestling with each other. And I hate John McGinn, so I was just like thinking, oh God, I don't want him to like pull a trick, because in the same way I don't like Andy Robertson. It's not just a Scottish thing, or maybe it is. I can't stand the pair of them. That's the reason why I didn't want anything to go McGinn's way. I didn't want him to score. I didn't want him to like play a role in like getting Dawson sent off. Because I think by this point he may have already been booked. Dawson probably was, because he got booked like within half an hour. But yeah, as with Lamina, to the rest of our wide team, we just seem to be a bit card happy at the moment.
Yeah, and I was going to say, with Lamina, he was on for, because of his bookings he's got this season, he still is currently technically on 4 bookings for the season. So he doesn't get a double suspension. So if he gets booked in the next game he plays, and we then lose him for a game as well. So like, just statistically, he's going to miss a game in November. As well 100%. As missing Bournemouth and
Gomez as well.
Yeah,
it won't be long.
Yeah, I mean, I love them both, and they are. It's a nice step change watching a very tenacious midfield. But yeah, they don't half rack up the cards. To be fair, but again, Bouba Traore is going to probably come in to replace Lamina, who again feels like he's deserving of his chance for the team. But Sonu is very keen to commit a foul as well. I think I saw some screenshots of Booper's stats this week, and I think he's committed like the most number of fouls without getting a yellow card, but he's also got the most number of tackles in the final third. So I think he might be quite fun in this system.
I thought he was excellent when he came on. I thought he was brilliant. He's impressed me every time, I think, as well. He was very good against City. I know Ipswich were dreadful, but I think he was our best player, apart from Chan, probably by a long way. Mm. I quite like him. He eats up the yards. He's got this massive sort of stride, and he doesn't give defenders exactly what, you know, the opposition a moment's sort of time on the ball at all, really. I think he's quite deserving of his chance. I wouldn't say I'd be dropping it. You know, at choice, I wouldn't be dropping Lamina or Gomez. I thought Gomez had quite a weak game on Sunday, but he's going to get his chance now. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if once he got his chance, he, almost stayed in there, to be honest, because I think he's got a lot to write. Big, imposing. Yeah, and as I say, he carries the ball quite well as well. I think he's quite underrated in that regard. I don't think he's just a destroyer. I actually think he's he seems to progress the ball quite quickly, a lot quicker than the other two. So, yeah, let's hope it works.
Yeah, I think less of him always, I guess, being a replacement for Lamina. Like, I really like João Gomes, and he's not really put a foot wrong so far. But be it suspension or just his age, he's not going to play every game this season and keep up that and keep a level of consistency. So we need to keep players like Traore happy and playing and keeping it competitive in the middle of the park as well. And I said, you know, we'll have Bellegarde back as well against Bournemouth as well. So I know, I think there's going to be a few question marks in terms of that team and the midfield, isn't there?
Yeah, I think you could go Boubacar Traore and Bellegarde, or you can go João Gomes and Bellegarde, or Traore and Gomes as well, depending on the attacking side of things, couldn't you? The like-for-like is to bring in Traore. But maybe against Bournemouth, who are really struggling, maybe we go slightly more attacking with one more ball-carrying, more attacking central midfielder, and let João Gomes kind of do his tenacious pit ball-type work. There's options, which we've not been able to say for a few seasons, which is nice to see. And I agree with Tom when he's just talked about. I think it's an underrated element of Traore's game is that he does have that rangy, you know, ball carrying ability, which means that he can kind of, whereas Lamina and Gomes are more sidewards and forwards with passing, Traore has those 5 or 6 yards going forward carrying the ball before then he passes it off, and he does give us an outlet for progression as well as that, and he kind of has the athleticism to still be, you know, doggish in that midfield as well. I think he's a nice player to have on the bench. He's a nice option.
Definitely. I was going to say, post sending off, the game was very much all Villa. I know it was like 10 minutes of stoppage time, or whatever, but it was a shaky last 10 minutes. And thankfully, Wolves just that held on. And, you know, we talked about the start, the front end of the show, and sort of think, you know, the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes is where he very much earned his keep. And yeah, I do think overall, I think particularly if you take out the sending off bit, I think it was a fair result. I know Gary O'Neill said after the game, I thought it was a decent game. Both teams were fairly evenly matched and felt, but went through every storm at the start where Saha had to make a couple of saves. I didn't really think our goal was under any massive threat, so I was a little bit disappointed with the draw, especially when you go one look, we're in a good spot controlling the opposition game wise. I know again he sort of mentioned that, you know, the game did turn on his head post sending off, but I think it's one of those where you sort of have to sort of quietly move on. And yeah, it was feisty on the pitch, it was also feisty off the pitch as well. Gary O'Neill giving it big licks to Unai Emery at the end.
He was on TalkSport earlier talking about this, and I didn't buy his explanation one bit. He claimed that there was 12 minutes added on, and we got up to 14, and then as soon as Villa hit the post, it was full time, wasn't it? So he said that he went over to talk to Emery about it, and then Emery just walked off. But if you actually watch the replay back, I think Emery goes to shake his hand, but then O'Neill still having a rant at him about something. So O'Neill just goes, "Oh, forget it then." And I think O'Neill just tells him to piss off back down the tunnel. And that's where the beef's come from. But it isn't really, I don't think he thinks there's any long-standing rivalry between the two of them. Just there it goes. I think he said, as it was, and quite rightly, he says he was quite an emotional bit of the game because we're down to 10. We're defending for our lives, trying to get the point. And Emery's trying to push his team forward to get the win that he thinks that they deserve. You're right. It was just all, and as you'd probably expect, it was all Villa towards the end. O'Neill, you put up there then, Rich, on the screen grab, that O'Neill said he was disappointed with the draw. I mean, I don't feel disappointed with the draw at all.
No.
given how the game's panned out, I think that's a really good point for us, because Villa had a flurry of chances towards the end. They could have won it, you know, especially not just the Watkins header off the post. I think Sarr tipped another one over the bar, fingertip save early on in the second half. They obviously had a bit more possession than us. So I think that's generally a good result. And I think a shout out for the subs as well, because the subs kind of had contrasting experiences. So Sasa, we know, come on, and I did quite well. Putting on that chance for Neto, O'Neill's already said that he doesn't feel like he can play or start a Premier League game, which is obviously a bit concerning, but, you know, we'll give him a bit of grace period after his injury. And Fabio was another one who come on. I've seen a lot of people sort of sticking the boot into Fabio. But, you know, when you come on, when you come into the game and you're down to 10 men, you're asked to play wide on the left. It's a bit of a tricky situation for him to be in. I mean, not a lot came off for him, but I don't think people should be like jumping in two-footed to Fabio given the circumstances he was coming on. I don't know if it's just me though, boys, just really trying to like, I'm willing him to try and have a really good season for us, just like for him and us, you know. I really want him to do well, so. But he just like just doesn't appear in favour, does he, at the moment? I'm not sure whether the spot in team for him is at the moment. But so on that side note, just as I said before, a good draw, if you can have a good draw, a good draw for us.
Off the back I think you can have a good draw, and I think it's definitely a point gained for us. Like I'm not saying we had chances that we could have won it, but I think Villa will probably be more disappointed they didn't win than us.
Definitely.
They would, because, you know, they've got delusions of grandeur, but you know, they won't go, oh, that was 2 points, definitely 2 points dropped. So hopefully, I think you end up with that lovely middle ground of a draw. But let's have a look at the league table, and I think this is the first time this season we've properly looked at it, because I think after 8 games it gives us a little bit of a barometer. I mean, it is still very densely packed, and I think what it's kind of showing so far, appreciate we were only 8 games into a 38 game season, but it's sort of what we already knew, that we aren't probably one of the worst three teams in this division. And let's be honest, you've got Sheffield United, who really can't string anything together. But Burnley, am I right in thinking Burnley's one win was against Sheffield United?
I think you're right.
Yeah, so if it wasn't for that, they'd be down there as well. But Bournemouth have kind of fallen to pieces without Gary O'Neill. But we're not necessarily going to really break, you know, above sort of 12th, really. And I know, I feel like that if the league table ended where it is right now, bar maybe like Chelsea, where they are at the moment in 11th, because I think they're kind of quietly going to pick up a bit of form. I think if that, like, bottom eight from Fulham downwards at the moment, if it finished like that, I think none of us would be particularly surprised. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, with how the season started, losing Lopetegui 6 days before the season started. Yeah. And 8 games, 8 points. So if we average a point a game, what, 38 points, that keeps us upright. And I think with the way we started this season, context is everything, isn't it? We can't forget that last week we did a number on the best team that a lot of people have ever seen in the Premier League era. So to then pick up a point against an annoyingly good Villa team, 4 points out of those 2 games, I'd have snapped your hand off for 2. So the fact that we've got double what I'd have taken, I think we should, walk away happy into the international break and just pray to any god that's listening that none of Neto or Huang or anyone picks up any injuries and we go back to, yeah, grinding. It's going to be a grinding season. We all need to get stuck into it as well. The fans need to still be there as well. We need to make Molineux what it's been the last couple of games, because, yeah, we can't. There's no point getting on people's backs. How is that going to help Fabio Silva? I'm completely with you, Pricey. What's the point? He's coming on there at that point. His only job is to be busy and to be a fresh pair of legs. He's not going to come on and score the winner at that point. So there's no point. We don't need scapegoats right now. We were dropped in it by our rock and roll manager, and we've got a vanilla manager that's still yet to win a lot of us over. But we've got 4 points out of the last two games. I think we should just be happy and walk away.
Yeah, I agree.
Look at the teams we've played as well. You can pass that. I mean, Everton is still below. So you look at Everton plays, I think they've played Luton, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, Fulham, Brentford. You know what I mean? And you contrast that to us, where our first four home games have been, you've had Brighton, Liverpool, City and Villa, you know, all teams that are in Europe this season. You know, granted, you know, we are Wolves and we generally do play better against the better sides. However, if you look at the next run of fixtures, there's no easy games in the Premier League, I appreciate, but surely there's more games there where you're going to be looking at picking up more points. And I think, like you said, if you looked at those fixtures at the start of the season and you said you had 8 points from 8 games, brand new manager, you know, a couple of days before the start of the season, you'd have probably said that's an okay return, or maybe even a half decent return, really. Bournemouth will be a bit, you just don't want it to go. The momentum just to shift in the opposite direction if we get a bad result against Bournemouth. That's the only thing I'll be hoping. But if you look at 3 points against Bournemouth, then I think the season's really starting to, you know, start to rock and roll at that point. So that's why I was desperate for us just not to lose on Sunday, because it just keeps that momentum. I know, you know, it's three games and two of them have been draws with three games unbeaten. And like you say, it's going to be a scrap. Every point matters. So just keep that momentum. We're playing for 90 minutes now, as opposed to spells and games, which seem to be stringing together 90-minute performances. So
completely agree on the playing throughout the entire game seems to be, whether it's a fitness or tactic thing, or just O'Neill getting his thoughts across a bit better. But when you touched on something there, I think the big key for Wolves is, you know, I'm sure I've read somewhere that we've technically had the hardest start in the league in terms of the level of opposition we've played. And, you know, to be where we are, if you're looking on that, you go, well, you know what, that's a good enough points return. But the big sticking point for Wolves, and it kind of always has been, it's can we get enough points from those teams around us? And, you know, don't get me wrong, we beat Everton, who had a couple of wins on the bounce now. But you look as if we managed to get a win against Luton, and it would have just pushed, obviously, them 1 point lower down, but us a couple of extra points up. And sometimes, and don't get me wrong, beating Man City is fucking fantastic. Getting draws against Villa at home, really solid point, as you sort of said. If we're able to take points from those around us as well, and really kind of just let them have the infliction of not getting points, I think that will really help Wolves going forward. And you say, hopefully we can start that against Bournemouth. And I think you look at the fixtures we've got coming up, and we're playing quite a few of those teams who are in the bottom half of the table in the next sort of 4 to 6 weeks post-international break. So hopefully, I think we're starting to move into being a bit more positive. I mean, the chronometer's out the window at the moment, or it's very firmly on the green line, I think, at the moment. I think we've moved away from DEFCON 2, which I think was where Twitter was at. So I think we're nicely in green / maybe a couple of people in yellow at the moment. So I think...
That's how you put up there, Rich, the league table. I mean, the teams from 16th down to 20th, Everton, Luton, Burnley, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, are exactly where I think 95% of people thought those teams would be. I mean, people at the start of the season were concerned about relegation, and to me, no chance, not with those teams there. I mean, Luton and Sheffield United, they're going to struggle to like get above 12 points this season, genuinely, because they're terrible. I mean, Sheffield United, I thought Luton would be bad, but Sheffield United, at least they're terrible, and at least Luton got a win. But Sheffield United just look way, way, way short of what's required. The only surprise there on that league table there at the minute is Brentford.
Mm.
So Brentford have had a bit of a shocker, haven't they? Only one win in eight.
Quite, but again, I think they had a couple of good wins at the start of the season, and then whether they've been found out or whatever you want to describe it as. And but you say if Brentford finished 15th, is it at the moment? 15th, you know, I think no one would be like aghast and go, oh wow, that's really shocking. We go, okay, well, I guess that sort of makes sense, particularly being without Ivan Toney. But you say, for me, even when Lopetegui left, like I said, you know what, I still think there's three worse teams than Wolves in this division, but okay, I don't think there's 10 worse. Or if we're arguably better than 10, I think I'm still yet to be convinced that we can really set ourselves apart from the riffraff at the bottom. Let's call them what they are.
Consistency,
scum.
Isn't it?
Some human scum.
Yeah, it ultimately comes down to consistency. So we've had, you know, two consistent performances now. So we just have to string that out. We know the quality's there. Mm. You know, you could have teams in the bottom there. If they got anywhere close to Neto's ability, certainly not. You know, they probably haven't got. I'd be very surprised if any of them have got, you know, someone in this goal scoring form as Hwang. So we've got individuals with real quality. So if they stay fit, this team should have more than enough to be better. Like Pricey says, you've got to be better than one of the team, really, because Sheffield United and Luton are going down. So you've got to be better than one of the team, and I'd back this team to be better than one of the team if that's what we're aiming for, if we are aiming for 17th. But
bit bleak in it when we're thinking like that. Yeah, it's like, do you remember when we were trying to work out if we get into the Champions League? very couple of optimistic podcasts, but no, you're right. So fingers crossed, post international break, we can keep up this positivity. And on that note, that seems like a really good place to end the show while we're all nice and happy. We are actually, guys, competing in a charity tournament next weekend on the Sunday of 15th. It's at Wolves training ground. It's the Wolves Content Creators Cup. It's a seven-side tournament alongside the Wolves Foundation, with I guess all the other Wolves major independent podcasts out there. So it should be a really fun day, raising money for Wolves Foundation, I believe. And if you're keen and able to donate to the cause, if you go to www.justgiving.com/page/contentcreatorscup, you can do so there. I'll make sure there's a link in the YouTube description as well, of course. Make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast. We're at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And we'll be back, no doubt, to talk about the Bournemouth game in a couple of weeks. Hopefully we'll try and get out a pod in the meantime as well, if something fun and interesting happens in Wolverhampton. And of course, until then though, it's goodbye from Ed.
Yeah, goodbye everyone. World Mental Health Day, check in on your pals. That's what Matt Guy always says.
Yes, I was going to say, and again, I will try and include links to our mental health podcast in there as well in the description. So feel free to give them a listen. It's goodbye from Tom.
See you guys.
It's goodbye from Adam.
Yeah, and also fair play to Norwich City for their video today, World Mental Health video. That was very powerful, very moving video. So it's not something we say very often, but well done to Norwich.
For
such a really well done video.
I was going to say that video had me, I was going to say hook, line and sinker, because you do think it's very much going one way. You're like, okay, I guess it. Yeah, that did kind of very much pull the, very much hit home. So again, if you haven't seen it, just go check it out. I'm sure it's like that pinned pinned tweet or something like that. But yeah, we'll make sure you can access any of our stuff as well if you fancy a listen. And I guess it's goodbye from me on that note as well after I plug our various causes and interests. So see you next time, gang. This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bed sheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.